Spoilers for I'll Have What She's Having, When Harry Met Sally. Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of Women in Screenwriting. And today we are talking about the classic, iconic 1989 film When Harry Met Sally, written by the brilliant Nora Ephron. And today I am joined by Lorna. How are you, Lorna? How are you going? Are you well?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
Good, good news. Yeah, good. On this cold pre-Christmas evening. Let's kick off maybe by talking about what are you bringing to this viewing of When Harry Met Sally. Give us your baggage on this.
So I watched it. Obviously I didn't watch it at the time, I say obviously. But no, I was a bit young to watch it at the time. But I don't know when I first watched it, but I have watched it many, many times. So I do have a lot of love for this film. And even though there's probably are some problematic things with it, I can't see them. All I see is just a love for that show.
Yeah, it's like that, isn't it? Do you find it's one of those movies that you can quite comfortably just go back to over and over and over again?
Yes, without a doubt. I could happily just go and watch it again now.
I'm a bit the same. Hmm. Yeah, I was thinking about it earlier today, and I thought, I wonder if I could actually calculate how many times I've watched this film, like just give it a go. And I thought, well, I don't think I saw it when it first came out. But I would have seen it in the early 90s, maybe. So maybe like 1993 or something. I'm guessing based on, you know, my age and where I think I was at that point in time.
Yeah.
And so I reckon I've watched it I definitely have watched it every year since then.
Wow.
Without question.
Mm.
And some years, particularly around that, you know, mid to late 90s, I probably watched it more than once a year. Mm. So, I'd be getting up there in the tens of, you know, certainly the mid tens of times that I've watched this film. But I, like you, just absolutely love it. Every time it's on TV, just, of course, you're going to watch it. Like, it's just one of those films. So yeah. We'll talk a little bit about what makes it one of those films that we just keep going back to. So maybe let's talk a little bit about the structure of the film.
Hmm.
So it's written by Nora Ephron, who is, I think, just a genius writer and sort of across platform, brilliant writer, books, plays, films, just amazing. And I think one of the strengths, well, probably the key strength of this film is its writing. So it'll be really good to sort of dig into that a little bit. But structure-wise, we've got a pretty clear three-act structure in this film. You know, we were talking about Some Like It Hot the other day and about whether, you know, was that a four-act or five-act or how many acts were there in that? There's a lot of acts. But this one seems to be quite straightforward.
Yeah.
But one of the things I noticed was that the first act is quite long and the inciting incident takes a while to get to. What were your thoughts about it, structural?
Yeah, well, to me, I felt like all the acts were balanced of equal length. I know we've had a quick discussion about this. So I was thinking that the first act was before they become friends, and then the second, which is half an hour, and then the second act being while they're friends, which is again half an hour, and then the third act starts, to me, when they sleep together, and then that's another half an hour.
Yeah, right. Well, okay. Well, we're agreed on the first act because I definitely agree with you. I think it finishes at that point where, I guess this is a question. I feel like it finishes at the inciting incident, which is really late at the end of the first act, which I think, and I'd love to know what you think the inciting incident is, I think it's the point that Sally asks Harry to go to dinner. I think that's the inciting incident because that's the moment that they move from being this thing that they just bump into each other every couple of years to actually the friendship. That's sort of beginning of the friendship, if you like. Would you agree with that, or did you see there was another point?
I was thinking that although you could argue that the film obviously starts with them having that journey together across to New York, that really because the plot is about their relationship and their relationship doesn't really start until they form that friendship, that I agree with you then that the real inciting incident is them going on that first date together, or date as friends.
It's funny, isn't it? Because it doesn't feel like a very strong inciting incident, really, does it?
No.
In traditional script writing terms, it's a bit like, well, let's go, should we have dinner? Okay. Mm.
And yet that's how every relationship starts, isn't it? It's like, let's do something together.
Yeah, exactly. Good point. And the funny thing about what I love about the first act is it's so neat. Like it starts off, like they actually have a little character arc from the beginning of the first act to the end of the first act. And actually, I was just thinking about it today. I thought if you wanted to take out the first 30 minutes of that movie, you could make a really satisfying short film with that first act just in itself, where the kind of where the film ends with them going, oh, well, let's go and have dinner. So, which I thought was really cool, really neat. Anyway, So first act is until that point in time where they become friends, I guess. Second act, see, I saw it a little bit differently, and it's good to chat about it. I felt like the kind of rising action, I guess, or the rising tension, if you like, is quite quick in that second act. So because everything is all kind of, you know, it's all, you get this kind of montage of them all doing great things together and the friendship builds. But then I thought the end of the second act was way after they'd slept together, because I felt that was like the conflict, then the downslide kicks in at the sort of at the point that they sleep together. And I felt like the real low, which is the beginning into then act three, is the point at which they're at their friend's wedding. That moment where they say to them, that's like this, like they've had this big fight. And they say, you know, if either of us were in any way attracted to these two, you know, it's like they're so humiliated and everybody laughs at them and they've just had a big row.
How cruel is that?
It's a hilarious line though, isn't it? It's such a brilliant line. But and there's just that point where there's the two of them standing with this look on their faces like, oh my God. And I kind of thought, okay, well, is that the end of act two? And is the beginning of act three, does it then go into the kind of New Year stuff? Or like the post-Christmas New Year? I don't know. Because that's again, kind of about half an hour's worth of, but I don't know. Okay, so on to our characters. So this is very clearly a two protagonist film, or is it? You know, they're both some character arcs for both of them. Personally, I think one is stronger than the other, but I'm really interested to hear your thoughts. You've got, character-wise, you've got Harry Burns, the cynical, love is useless, a waste of time. He's just sort of quite sassy and, but very cynical. Cynicism is very strong, doesn't believe in relationships, and that's why he behaves appallingly, apparently. Sally Albright, by comparison, is much more optimistic. She's quite romantic. But she's got this optimism that I think sort of sticks with her through the film. What are your thoughts about them character-wise?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously Harry is really annoying. We've all known boys like that at university, haven't we? It's like they just think that they're so deep because they think about death. It's like, get over it. And like Sally says, you're just going to end up like wasting your life thinking about death.
Yeah, just like... I thought that was brilliant. I thought he came. I mean, he's such an angry young man, isn't he? In that beginning, and yeah, so typical, such a stereotype, but so fantastically believable. And I love it. You know, I read the last page of the book because in case I die before I finish the book, you know, it's like, whoa, he's so tough, he's so deep.
And that would be the worst thing about dying, would be not reading the end of the book.
but it's like, I'm so prepared, you know, It's really funny. But actually, I also think, and I don't know what you think, I think, because I know you said Harry was a bit annoying, I think that Sally could be really annoying as well as a character.
Oh, I mean, without a doubt, yeah. Yeah, I mean, her optimism is equally potentially annoying as well, isn't it? And so that's why they kind of, like, completely bounce off each other to start off with. Although he's still quite happy to consider sleeping with her, just because it's like he'd consider anybody really. She's attractive.
He would. She's not attractive. I think he made that quite clear, didn't he? So it's too late. It's already out there, which is great. But I also think one of the things that saves, because I think Harry is a bit annoying but kind of funny, and it's his wit that sort of saves him. But what saves Sally, I think. And I don't know what your thoughts are, but the way she, her peculiarities and the fact that, because she's quite particular and quite orderly, and you know, when, like, in a car, she's got the map all marked out, you know, it's on the visor, everything's neat and tidy and perfect, and it's a little bit like, you know, she's a bit too perfect. But what sort of saves her, I think, is the fact that she does have that really random way of ordering things, in which makes her a bit more endearing rather than become actually quite annoying. So
depends on whether or not you're the waiter or waitress, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And that waitress's face in that scene was just magic. It was a beautiful moment. But yeah, so they've both got some annoyances, but both have these sort of redemption about them. What did you think about? Well, okay. Well, no, let's talk about arcs first. What did you think about their arcs? Do they both have character arcs? Are they as strong as each other? What do you think?
I think Harry's is probably stronger, don't you? Because he's the one that really needs to kind of get his head out of his own ass a bit and then realise that he does have feelings. And obviously he spends the whole of the second act realising that he has feelings once she's gone. And so Helen's gone and suddenly he's like, oh, she's gone. And it does completely destroy him.
It's nice, the reflection, don't you think, of their friends who get together, like they introduce them, and then you see their relationship take this perfect sort of arc into marriage, because I guess that's what their desires were. It's lovely, you know, all those beats of a typical traditional relationship: get married, live together, meet, get married, live together, great friends, great relationship, boom. And then there's like Harry and Sally just go the other way and just combust, and it's beautiful. I love the way they're sort of reflected. This is what you could be doing, but Harry, mainly, you're such an idiot, this is what you miss out on. And how else did you find his arc was stronger than Sally's?
Well, in the final act, it's very much about him and his realization. And so all she needs to do is to forgive him for being a bit of a douche to her. Because in the second act, they've both kind of got different issues going on. She's pretending she's fine about her and Joe being over, and that is her barrier to moving on. Whereas for him, his barrier to moving on is just, so he's just having lots of relationships that are all really superficial and pretending that that is going to help him move on. But so they're both going about it in different ways.
Yeah, exactly. And there is, I think you're right. I think Harry definitely has the bigger arc. He seems to have the bigger shift from the cynic who doesn't believe in love to someone who does believe in love and actually is quite romantic at the end, which is, And certainly in their little outtake at the end, it's quite nice. But what I think is interesting is that Casablanca moment. So there's two points in the film where they talk about Casablanca. One's right at the beginning in the car, and it's an argument that they have about what the characters in Casablanca should do. And they're both very vehement about it. You know, they both have opposite opinions, and they're very strong. And then, but then in sort of certainly in the second act, when they're on the phone and they're watching it on the television and they're both softer, and actually Sally say something like,
she said that she would never have chosen the other guy over Humphrey Bogart, and she can't believe that she said that.
Yeah. So that's a lovely moment because it shows us how both of them have started to shift. Even Sally. So, and I don't think, I mean, Sally does stay organized and optimistic to the end. I don't think she has this massive shift, but she does soften slightly, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does. Yeah. She does.
And even at the end,
she loses some of the practicality. She was at the start, she was very rigid and practical in terms of, and she was trying to be rigid and practical in terms of her emotions as well, wasn't she? And they were both controlling their emotions in different ways. So he was keeping everything superficial, and so was she, but just doing things in very opposite ways.
Yeah, and I think she also had this idea of perfection, didn't she? She was going to New York. She knew how her life was going to pan out, and she was going to be a journalist, and she was going to be amazing. She was going to meet this guy, and then when with Joe, when that doesn't work out, I guess the arc for her is about maybe being more realistic about relationships, maybe. But then right at the end, that little outtake of those two that meets the other vignettes that are inserted all the way through, when they have their little vignette, I loved it that Harry then says, oh, you know, you have to have the chocolate sauce on the side because not everybody likes it on the coconut cake. And I thought, isn't that interesting? So Sally is just exactly the same, but he's come around to her way of thinking on that sort of stuff. So you got a real sense of that stronger art from him, I think. It's kind of funny. But yeah, kind of nice. Were there anything else you noticed character-wise?
Something popped into my head and it's popped back out again. And it was about Harry and his cynicism. He was using his cynicism to protect himself from getting hurt, but he ended up getting hurt anyway. So whatever you try and do to try and protect yourself from getting hurt, it doesn't work. You're going to get hurt anyway. So Sally was using her optimism to try and protect herself from getting hurt. And eventually she finally hit a wall and she was like really accepting the fact that she was upset about Joe and that he was wanting to marry someone else. And he never wanted to marry her.
Yeah, that was really funny, wasn't it? That was a great
even though she accepted that she never wanted to marry him either.
I know. Doesn't matter though, does it?
No.
Doesn't matter. It's completely irrelevant. But yeah, I like that. And I like the way that, again, through that arc that, you know, both of them lost their relationships. Sally was hurt, but it was more about the idea of it rather than the, exactly as you said, it was like, she didn't want to marry him either, but that didn't matter. It was the principle of it, you know.
Yeah,
it was upset her more than the actual thing. Whereas with Harry, even though he was massively cynical and didn't believe in love, when he did get married, he got really hurt by that. Like that relationship really floored him. So actually that reinforced for him that his cynicism at the beginning was correct and he should have been more like that. So that was a really, and then took ages for him to come around out of that. Let's talk for a second about the little vignettes. What did you think of the vignettes of those couples that got interspersed through the film? It was a really interesting technique. What did you think?
Yeah, but they're so cute, aren't they? I just absolutely adore them. I just want to like see the film of every single one of those stories, don't you?
Yeah, totally. They are really lovely, aren't they? Very heartwarming. And well, they do a couple of things too, because they kind of chapterize the film a little bit. They give us these little breaks, but also it gives you those different sort of dimensions to love as well, which I think is lovely, and also then highlights the sort of friendship thing, because ultimately the question is about can men and women ever be friends, just friends? So I think it sort of goes to answer that a little way. So that brings us to an interesting point about premise of this rom-com. So this is a rom-com, but one of the things I think makes it's a little bit different, isn't it? It's not like a typical rom-com. So it uses a lot of the rom-com beats and sort of formulas, but it doesn't, I don't think, it doesn't have any of the contrivances, is that a word, of of other rom-coms. What do you think?
Yeah, it is definitely different. It is structured slightly differently. And usually you do get just one perspective, don't you? And you've obviously got the dual protagonist thing going on here. I think because so much of it is about their friendship, And again, but it does do the 80s rom-com thing of tying it up quite quickly and neatly at the end, just suddenly, and then da-da-da-da, she puts
That's true. I think one of the things I was thinking about was that is it, and I guess it probably is a question around, like I think about that premise a lot, and I think one of the reasons of the success of the film is because of that premise. And because it's almost a universal question, isn't it? You know, like it asks, you know, can men and women ever be friends? And there's something about that question, you know, or whoever it is, it doesn't have to be men and women or whatever, you know, can people that could be attracted to each other ever just be friends? Just friends. And I think that's one of the strengths, is that it does, and I think that's why it's always appealing, because there's always people that want to are asking that question or are in the throes of that sort of world. So do you think that could be one of the things that makes it
strong? Yeah, probably. And is the answer no at the end of the day? Is that what the film's going to say ultimately?
What do you think?
I mean, the end would suggest ultimately no. But obviously they are genuine friends in the middle, and they're really not thinking about sleeping with each other until they are.
Well, that's a really good point, because I thought that maybe it was about, well, you have to be, it's almost like you have to be friends to be, like,
well,
friendship is,
I mean,
the core thing,
yes, yeah, you know? Yeah, maybe it's the question's the wrong question. Maybe that's what it is. Is that can you be in a relationship if you're not friends? I mean, and really, ultimately, the friendship is the thing that really kind of is the foundation of everything.
And is the difference between Harry's fly-by-night relationships that are relatively shallow and, yes. And I guess that, because that's, I think, ultimately what makes Harry scared, isn't it? Is that he does recognize that strength of feeling towards Sally, and it scares him.
Well, and the thing is that as hard as I am on Harry, and as much as he annoys me, my character arc is more like Harry's than it is than Sally's, so, you know,
yeah.
It says a lot about me, the fact that he annoys me so much.
Well, a bit of seeing yourself perhaps in, it's an interesting question, isn't it? And perhaps we've all been Harry and all been Sally at some point in our lives anyway, but that's another podcast, and not one about filmmaking. But also thinking just back to that premise point, so, you know, it is a universal question, and I was thinking about, I think that is part of its success, in the same way that if you think about Friends, the fantastic series that, again, everybody loves and has had this generational adoration, you know, from Gen X right the way through, because the premise of that is about that time in your life when your friends are your family, which I think is that's neither of those is structured as a proper premise would be, as we are taught to structure a premise, but they are really fantastic, you know, thematic underpinnings for a film, because they are universal. And I think that's one of the things that makes them so strong. Do you think that makes sense?
Yeah.
Or am I just barking up the wrong tree?
Yeah. Makes sense to me.
Yeah. I don't know. I find, and it's one of the things I struggle with around writing a premise. A lot of the time, this is just my experience, I like to write a premise around a question, which is a kind of, it has a broad, a broad opportunity for exploration, I guess. And maybe that's it. Maybe actually that's it. Maybe I just answered it. Maybe it's because that's the kind of films that I'm attracted to.
I want to explore questions
rather than, you know, necessarily have a protagonist and a set of stakes and a whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. What are some of the, let's talk about some of the things that we liked about this. Let's talk about that scene. scene, that iconic one. I'm talking about the orgasm scene, but it is iconic, isn't it? It has transcended the film. It has come into our culture. We talk about it all the time. That I'll have what she's having is just, you know,
my favorite
line
of any film, I think.
Is it? Is it your favourite line? Yeah, it's pretty good, isn't it? Apparently, I heard that they workshopped this scene. Oh, I read that. They workshopped this scene. And Billy Crystal threw it in at the end of the workshop, which I think is just, it's just a genius line, isn't it? And the scene would not be what it is without that scene. What is it, Jeith, about it that makes that scene so iconic? Is it about that it's so, oh, it's about an orgasm? Is it that? Or is it more than that, do you think?
I think, I mean, obviously there's the shock factor, but it's also, I mean, have we ever seen anything like it before or since? I don't think so. I think, but it's the charm of the two characters. And it's the fact that Sally is so determined to make her point known. I mean, because she is uptight. She, out of the two of them, she is the most uptight, but she manages to get him feeling uncomfortable, which I don't think it's quite difficult to do.
Yes, that's true. And I think that's one of the things, we'll come back to the scene in a second, but I think that's one of the strengths of Sally's character, is she holds her own all the way through that movie. You know, she's there's never a question of her not being his equal. You know, she really does equal him all the way through, which is great. Do you think it's also about the fact, again, going back to the universalness and the kind of intrigue of the universal stuff, the fact that she actually takes Harry to task on something that we don't talk about? Like, you know, like he's got this idea about, oh, I know when when somebody's having a great time, blah, blah, blah. And she just takes him and she talks about something that, like, well, A, we had never seen that on screen, that sort of, as first thing. But also I think the fact that she just takes him to task on something that we just didn't talk about then, did we?
No, absolutely not.
Which I thought was great. and obviously I think Meg Ryan did a brilliant job at that scene. That's part of, I think, the strength of it as well. Just fantastic, like just a great performance. Apparently it was the director's mum who was the character
that really
the final line, which I think is kind of cute. Just like a little bit embarrassing. Would you put your mum in the scene to say that line? No, a really interesting choice, but like, you know, he obviously saw the strength of that line, right? And was like, wow, I mean, what a great thing to have as a legacy. I said that line, you know, it's me as that character, which was great. What other things anything else about that scene that felt made it particularly iconic, or do you think it is just that combination of the topic and the times kind of thing?
I mean that, but also because I think it is a turning point for Harry. I think he does, because he doesn't have a comeback to that, and normally he does have a comeback. I mean, and so he doesn't often have a moment of like, oh, okay. So it just kind of changes his whole world view at that point, I think. Is it the midpoint? I don't actually know where it is, but obviously it is in the second act. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was kind of in there as the midpoint for him as a character. But also for her, because it shows her kind of becoming less uptight as well. So,
well, exactly, right? You can't be uptight to do that in a restaurant, can you? You know, you've got to be feeling right. So, yeah, there is that. I think that's really interesting. I do wonder, maybe it is around the midpoint. It's got to be, hasn't it? It's got to be. So what else? What about things like what other things? Well, I'll throw something at you. One of the things I also liked about this film was the language, and the fact that the language was really I felt like nothing was throwaway, but also there was a real naturalness to the language. There was the sort of repetition of phrases, and just it was very like the characters talked very in that sort of messy way that we talk, which I thought was really, really good. Did you notice anything about that?
I mean, apart from to say that it was so natural, so just kind of when they're just wandering around art galleries and things or museums, and they are just chatting, and they just kind of sometimes go off on tangents. There's something about it, like Harry says at some point that oh, he thinks that hieroglyphs are just like cartoons about a character called Sphinxy, and in the midst of them having a much more deep conversation, and then like that it comes back again, and that it, so it does feel very real in terms of the way that people just kind of natter away to each other who are very comfortable with each other.
And that's what it shows, doesn't it? That and the comfort and the authentic friendship, I think, which is great. I love the line, and it's such a weird line, but I love the line when they were playing, on the board game. What's it called?
Pictionary. Yeah.
kind of Pictionary thing, yeah.
Yeah.
And when Jess said, and they're all calling out, and Sally is drawing the mouth and the baby. And he goes, and he yells, he goes, baby fish mouth. But, you know, they're trying to guess. And he goes, baby fish mouth, baby fish. And then at the end, and they go, no, it's baby talk. And he goes, baby talk? That's not a phrase. And Billy Crystal goes, oh, yeah, but baby fish mouth is sweeping the nation. You know, it was like so good. That just takes that really sassy moment of when you are with your friends and someone does say something really stupid. And so I love that. I thought that really created that friendship really nicely. But it also wasn't a wasted line. It kind of, you know, it added to the humor, obviously, but also showed, you know, a bunch of things about the characters, which I really loved. Okay. So what other things? Are there anything you didn't like about the film?
Well, I mean, yeah, like I've said, is that Harry does annoy me from time to time. But again, that's on me as much as it is anything else. But it is that. So initially, it's that kind of him presuming to know anything about her, and that him thinking that he's really deep, and so she, because she's happy, she must be shallow, and that all those kind of assumptions that kind of get broken down a bit during the journey that they have together. And if they hadn't have had that initial journey of them kind of getting over their initial assumptions about each other and annoyances, I mean, they still, obviously there are those annoyances there, but by the end she would have gladly actually kept in touch with him as a friend. It's just that he said that they couldn't be friends. But I think that long drawn out forced proximity did kind of break down some of their barriers to each other in a way that if they'd have just initially met, they'd have just gone ugh, and then never thought again of each other. Just because you have at university there were so many boys like that, it's just like, oh, does he really get to have a happy ending?
Right, so annoying boys aside, were there any other things that you particularly liked in this film?
Yeah, I mean, there's the orgasm scene, you can't, and the I'll have what she's having, and there's when she calls up Harry and says Joe's getting married. That, I mean, I love that moment because finally she's accepted the fact that she's not fine with the breakup. It's taken all that time for her to suddenly finally admit that there is pain there that she needs to face.
And Harry responded really well, didn't he?
Yeah, well, exactly.
In terms of going straight over.
He understood what that meant. Everything about that statement, he understood every layer of that.
Yeah. Yeah, which was good. So that was really the point that we saw the true friendship, didn't we? Before it got really awkward. I want to talk about the grapes spit bit. It's one of my favourite parts of the film, and for a couple of reasons. So this is the part up front when they're on their journey and Harry's being annoying and talking about how tough he is and how he's so prepared for death and how he reads the end of the books and blah, blah, blah. And he's eating grapes. And what I love about this is he crashes into Sally's perfect world. You know, she's got her neat car and the maps on the visor and everything's tidy and organized in the back. And he gets in and he's like leaning into the back. He's got like a butt in the face trying to grab his grapes, you know. And he just comes in as this force of disruption, you know. And he sits there and then he starts, and I love it. And he chews the grape and then he says a line and then he spits the grape and it hits the window and he goes, I'll wind down the window, right? And it's just so funny. But then it's not just that point. It's then he goes on to continue to spit the pips out as he delivers his lines. And I like that. I think it's such a brilliant device because it does two things. It kind of, A, it's just really funny in its own right. B, it shows the disruption that he has, you know, he's interrupting this perfect life. But also it gives the jokes a moment to land, you know, because there's so much fast-paced dialogue. So it gives us, it's almost like it's a beat. He goes, you know, line, spit, line. And it's just genius. So I thought from a filmmaking point of view, that's the magic of where the script writing and the filmmaking come together. Was just so good. Just love it. Every time I see it.
It's true. And you can see it in the script as well, can't you, in terms of, and the thinking in terms of there needs to be a pause here. And so she's woven in something there that says so much about his character and will also add tension between the two of them. And it's just beautiful rather than just being like, she sighs or, you know, something.
Yeah, definitely. Because there are a lot of scenes in this movie where the two of them are sitting talking. So there is a lot of opportunity to be boring. So having things like that, like, well, if you think the cafe scene, the orgasm scene, is another scene where they're sitting talking, but what they do with that to make that really engaging. Same with this scene. This is two people driving in a car on a road trip. Could be really boring. They mix it up. And so I love the way they do that. And they kind of add that filmmaking spice to it to really take the script and make it even better, which is great. It reminds me a little bit, and we didn't talk about it, but when we were talking, chatting about Some Like It Hot, and that scene where Geraldine and Daphne, where Daphne gets proposed to and she's lying on a bed and Tony Curtis' character comes in and says, you can't marry Osgood. And, you know, he's got the maracas and, you know, that scene, and he keeps shaking his maracas, like dancing around. And I'm thinking, why is he shaking the maracas? But that the maracas do the same job as the pips because they let the jokes land because every line escalates and escalates, but then it allows it. It's beautiful. So I love those moments.
And then it goes from the kind of excited, it emphasizes the excited, and then the drop from like, oh, I'm a boy.
Yes,
I'm a boy,
exactly. So you get two. So the audience is allowed a break and understands the difference between the lines and can laugh and then finish laughing and then hear the next line and then laugh again. But yeah, it also then, and that helps and typifies the character as well because, gosh, you know, what a gross boy spitting the pips out the window anyway, right? So it tells us a bit more about Harry's character. Anyway, we do love Harry. We don't, you know, we don't want to pick on Harry. He's a good character. And he comes around in the end, which is good. any other points that you wanted to, that you noticed in the film that you wanted to?
So as much as the end like makes me cry, I mean, I've literally only just finished watching it just before coming on this, and I don't know whether my eyes are still looking a little bit puffy, but oh yeah, I absolutely just, it gets me every single time. But just in terms of the fact that really what's required of her is to forgive him for being a bit of an arse. And it's just like so often that essentially is what the girl's job, isn't it? So many rom-coms is to forgive the boy for being a bit of an arse.
Yeah, that's true, actually. So there's an opportunity, isn't it, to turn that trope on its head and make more characters that are reverse that or different again. Yeah. If we were to visit Harry and Sally, would they still be together, do you think?
Oh, I hope so. Don't say that. Don't even put the question in my mind.
Sorry.
I think, they finally kind of, found each other in amongst all the noise of each other's lives and their kind of belief systems and the ways that they've got of protecting themselves. They've finally kind of broken through all of that and gone, oh, yeah, it's you. It's always been you.
And it does, I mean, and I guess it's the thing, isn't it? It shows you that their relationship is based on really solid friendship and is good, is a really good solid relationship. Because actually, remember, And this is, I think this is, goes back to the point about how it breaks a lot of the conventions of traditional rom-coms. It doesn't get romantic till nearly an hour in. Like, their relationship doesn't get romantic for a long time. So it's, but again, it just reinforces how their relationship develops. And also, you're talking about over 12 years that their relationship has developed. So, yeah, and so I guess, so you would think that that should make them on pretty solid ground. So don't worry, Dawna, they're okay. They haven't broken up. Everything's fine. So in summation then, on our little dalliance to Harry and Sally, what would you say, if from a screenwriting point of view, makes this such an iconic film?
It's just so beautifully written, isn't it? It's so character driven, and it never forgets who the characters are. There's no point at which you think that the characters are acting against their normal way of behaving, everything, because occasionally with rom-coms in particular, you can get like, yeah, did that choice really make sense for that character to do that? But every point, I think, that's very clearly signposted that this is what the characters would do. So even though Sally is the one who kind of most of the time actually is the one that sees, like, so Harry initially is like, oh yeah, you're attractive, but that's as far as it goes. And then, but in terms of emotionally, most of the time it's Sally that kind of realizes there's a bit more there under the surface. But even in the early days after she's broken up with Joe and she's actually going on a date, that isn't surprising to me that she's kind of not at all thinking of Harry in that way, because he's clearly told her that he doesn't see her in that way. And so she's just taken him at face value. And then it isn't until, like, their friendship really develops later on that, like, she starts to be like, oh, actually, and how comfortable she feels about him dating other people. And
yeah. And then you get those little subtle moments, like the first New Year's Eve where they go together and they're dancing and they've both got that look on their face, like they feel, they got the feels and they're trying to pretend they don't. So, it's funny. Interesting. I think, it's strength of writing, strength of characters. And, I mean, really, it's about, like, you could have those two characters doing anything, anywhere, and you'd have a story, right? They're so beautifully matched. They're so different enough. You just put them in a room and watch it happen, you know, like it's, which is lovely. So, testament to the writing. And I loved that it's a rom-com that doesn't fall into cliches. It's, you know, because I think that sometimes, you know, and we've talked about Holiday and, you know, a lot of other rom-coms in our Is Rom-Com Dead? And sometimes they fall into cliches, don't they? You know, and you let them go because you think, okay, well, we know it's going to be twee and we know it's going to be a bit silly, and we kind of let it off because we know what we're getting. But I don't feel like this does. I think this is really, really truthful to a friendship and a relationship, which is good. Yeah. So I think it's that combination, like, and picking a premise, picking a theme, picking themes and a premise that are universal and have really broad and long-term appeal.
Yeah. And there's that, like, because so often rom-coms can be a bit kind of moralistic about, like, sleeping around and things like that, and I quite like the argument that they have when their friends are moving in together, and they so Sally has a go at Harry for, like, sleeping around and having all these superficial relationships, but then he has a go back at her going, well, so how is your pretending you're okay with Joe and, like, having and not having any relationships helping you get over Joe? And it's so true. It's just they're both finding different ways to kind of keep other people at a distance, and it's just two sides of the same coin, and there was no sense that one side was better than the other.
No, that's true, actually. Very well summarised. Thank you, Lorna. So will this remain one of your go-to movies?
Without a doubt, yeah.
Final question then. Is this a Christmas movie?
Does it ever actually have Christmas in it? It's got New Year's, hasn't it? But
it's another one. It's like the holiday, right? No, Christmas Day.
Yeah.
But New Year's Day. But it has. She does get a tree.
That's true. There is the tree.
She gets a tree twice.
Like. Yeah. Once with him and once without him. It's quite funny watching him wrestle with a tree, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was funny, actually, wasn't it? So do you think it is? Would you consider it a Christmas rom-com or not?
It feels very Christmassy, doesn't it? Even if it doesn't have Christmas Day in it. It doesn't need Christmas Day to be Christmassy, does it?
No.
I think the thing is with New Year is that it marks a new year, doesn't it? And so it helps you to see that the characters... Yeah, it's funny that, isn't it? So it gives a sense the fact that they are, the time is passing, isn't it?
Yes, it's exactly, an easy way. Exactly. Yeah. And time passing is important in this relationship because it is very much a continuum of a long period of time, which is, you know, a long growing relationship, which is good. And also allows us to see those differences. So Christmas to Christmas, they're, you know, mid in the second act, they're, you know, they're together and whatever, and then later they're apart. And it gives you that reflective moments of this is how it used to be. So yeah, it does a lot of good things. But yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I wouldn't, if someone said list your Christmas movies, I wouldn't necessarily go, well, this is a Christmas movie. But it kind of is. And I kind of like to watch it at this time of year because it's got a lot of Christmas. You know, anyway. Right. Well, thank you for that very interesting chat about one of my favorite movies. And and it's been nice. I watched it just the other day as well. And it's, I feel it gets you a bit in the Christmas spirit too, which is nice. So, does, doesn't it? Warm, makes you warm and fuzzy, which is good. Thank you again. Really great to chat. And we'll be chatting again. Well, actually, I think we're not chatting now until I think we're taking a break over Christmas and then we'll be back in the new year. So thank you. And importantly, if you were watching this and you have not subscribed to the Script Department channel, please do. Please like, share, subscribe to all our channels everywhere, all over social media. You can subscribe on YouTube to get little reminders every time a new episode comes out. And if you want to have a look at what we're doing at thescriptdepartment.net, you can check out our global team of screenwriters and what we're all up to. Thank you very much. So hope you enjoyed the episode and see you soon. Bye-bye.